Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
If you'd like to go ahead and open up to Daniel chapter 7, that's where we're going to be spending some time tonight. Daniel chapter 7, it is an exciting time in the life of this congregation, as Joe has already led us in prayer about. We're thinking of the five men who will be appointed next Sunday as elders, as shepherds of this congregation. It's a blessing to have so many Christian men and women worshiping together, and it's a blessing to be in a congregation where there are so many capable individuals. And as we've mentioned before in thinking about those who serve as elders and deacons, we realize that not everyone can serve in all those roles. And we have so many wonderful people who can do that. And so we're just thankful to have the process that we went through as the elders have led us this year through that process. And we're wanting to be praying for them and for their families, as we know that it's an awesome responsibility and an awesome privilege. We also had a lot of announcements this morning, which is really exciting. That means there's a lot that's taking place. One of those was about our Lads to Leaders program that Chris Tullis is going to be coordinating this year. And let me just encourage you, if you haven't been part of that, that is a wonderful way for not only our young people to learn about how to serve, but also to get connected with other adults. And to be spending time on this Sunday afternoon or Wednesday evening practices, if you haven't been around that, you'll definitely want to be part of that. And so please be sure to keep that in your mind and in your prayers as we plan for that. I don't know if you've ever had a recurring nightmare, one of those dreams that just keeps showing up night after night. I know that I had a recurring nightmare as a child that I can still vividly remember. It was a nightmare that starred the most fearsome of all creatures known to man. That is, of course, the piggy bank. The piggy bank that sat on my chest of drawers was just kind of a normal piggy bank. Didn't look too different than this one. But I had some very vivid dreams. Maybe it was because I watched a lot of Muppets growing up. But I had dreams that the piggy bank would come to life. His name was Mr. Piggy. He was pretty fierce. And so I was, I don't know, about four or five. I hope it was only four or five. I hope it wasn't later in my childhood. I think it was just around four or five. We lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, and my father was in youth ministry, which meant he was on trips a lot of time, or it was just my mother staying in the house with me. And she says, looking back, there were some times when I had her convinced that Mr. Piggy was coming to life and talking. And I would say, he's talking to me, and she'd come in and look at him, and nothing was happening. You know, and if you're a parent, you understand how that goes. During the day, when I'd look at the piggy bank, it didn't seem all that scary to me. But there's something about that time at night where shadows hit things differently, and you just start to dream and your imagination runs away with you. As we get older, our nightmares get more vivid, and sometimes they're not anything we want to laugh about. We have nightmares about what could possibly happen to us in the future. We have nightmares about difficult situations that we're dealing with. When we look at Daniel chapter 7, we get what's called a dream, but in reality it starts off as a nightmare. In fact, it's a nightmare complete with beasts that come out of the sea. That sounds like a nightmare, doesn't it? And when we get to Daniel chapter 7, as we've been moving through the book of Daniel, thinking about what it means to stand out, we're getting to a very different portion of Scripture. Daniel 1 through 6 was pretty straightforward. It was narrative. You could read from beginning to end. If you were going to make a movie about Daniel chapters 1 through 6, you knew what order the events would take place in and who would be the king and what would happen. But when we get to Daniel chapters 7 through 12, we're getting to a whole different kind of biblical writing. It's called apocalyptic literature. That's a big word that simply means God is pulling back the curtain and showing us things that are going to happen. And in order for us to understand it, these things are seen in vivid pictures. It's like we'd read in the book of Revelation. When you think about Revelation, once you get past those first couple of chapters, the first few chapters that deal with the churches in Asia, you have these visions of beasts and dragons and everything taking place. That's the same kind of writing in Daniel chapter 7 through 12. And I have to tell you, it's a little bit intimidating. Because it's easier to preach a sermon about the fiery furnace or about Daniel in a den of lions than it is to dig through some of these dreams and visions and try to see how that could apply to us. But as I've thought about what's happened this week, as I thought about even what's happened in the last few days, attacks that we've seen that, as Joe mentioned in prayer so well when he said there's so little regard for human life, we see evil around us. And it really shakes us to our core. And these aren't nightmares we're having at night. This is real life. We're dealing with serious evil. And I really think that Daniel chapter 7 has something powerful to say to that. And so what I'd like for us to do tonight is to read through the chapter. We'll read through the first 14 or 15 verses, and then we'll think about what we've discovered. And then the latter half of the chapter is really Daniel finding out what the first half meant. But as we read it, I just want to remind us, we're going to be looking at some very vivid pictures. And it's as if you have this powerful message, and this is the way God's communicating it. This was a specific kind of writing. When people heard this, when they read this, for instance, when they read Revelation and saw apocalyptic literature, they knew what that was. They knew it was a specific kind of writing. And so we're not thinking about literal beasts with literal horns, but we're thinking about what that means. Also, we see this kind of writing, it's very crisis-oriented, that it's written to help people who are in the midst of crisis. And as we know, God's people were in Babylonian captivity, and they're wrestling with what all that means. So we begin in verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. So in the very beginning, we have Belshazzar as king. You may remember, as we've gone through Daniel, he was the king in chapter 5 when you had the writing on the wall. He'd misused those vessels out of the temple. And so he's the one that is king when Daniel has this vision. That means we're not necessarily going in chronological order here. And so we get a signal of that at the beginning of the chapter. And he describes these beasts coming out of the sea. And we've mentioned before, thinking about some of Jesus' miracles, that in the pagan world, when you're thinking of the ancient world, the sea represented chaos. It was uncontrollable. Imagine trying to make your living basing your life on what you could get by trading that would require you to be on the sea, by fishing, and you couldn't predict it. And so you have these four great winds that stir up the sea, and then you have four beasts that come out of it. And here's when we get to the really vivid descriptions. Verse 4, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And behold, the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise, devour much flesh. And this, after this I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, terrifying and dreadful, and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different than all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the 1st horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. Let's just pause right here and remind ourselves, we are in the middle of apocalyptic language. We have these 4 beasts that have come up, and there's something about the 4th one that really sends chills down Daniel's spine. It really is something that catches his attention. And you have these horns that are coming out of the 4th beast, and then you have a horn that all of a sudden is talking. Now, if we're thinking about things literally, that might sound like a cartoon, but Daniel didn't think it was very funny because he understood what was being said. Then you have a judge that shows up, the Ancient of Days. And notice what happens in verse 10. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000 thousands served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. I looked then, because the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. To help us understand a little bit about what might be happening, here's an illustration. Again, this is just one artist's rendering of what these beasts could look like, just to help give us a little bit of perspective. You have the first beast that's a lion with wings of an eagle. Then you have the ferocious bear with the ribs in its mouth. And then you have this third beast, and you'll notice the third beast has four heads. And so you have this leopard with four heads, and then you have a beast that really can't be classified as an animal. Here the artist has depicted it almost like a dinosaur. It's hard to determine exactly what kind of animal this was. But what you notice about each of these beasts that is described is something that is important to read in apocalyptic literature, and that is each one of these represents something that is a variation on a beast. It's not a true animal. It's something different. It might be half lion, half eagle. It might be an animal with four heads. There's something about it that isn't part of God's true creation. It's like a perversion of it. And that's helpful for us to understand what these beasts could represent. We're not getting a sense of the creation that God created and said it was good. We're getting something different entirely. Now, if you keep these in mind and think back to Daniel chapter 2, this time it wasn't Daniel having a dream, but it was Nebuchadnezzar having a dream. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about this great, you had the great statue in his dream, and it had the different elements, had four different elements that represented four kingdoms, and then ultimately it had the kingdom that would crush all of those. What Daniel is getting in Daniel chapter 7 is a vision that's similar to what Nebuchadnezzar got in Daniel chapter 2. And it's kind of interesting that in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, it's kind of these precious metals and elements of the earth. But in Daniel's dreams, they're beasts. They're almost like monsters. And so as we think about that and keep that in mind, we remember who shows up after these four beasts are introduced. The Ancient of Days, who has thousands serving him, and it's interesting to see the way the text says 1,000 thousands served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. It would be hard to imagine a number greater than 10,000 times 10,000. I mean, this is just trying to communicate to us there's an incredible multitude that's here. As scary as these four beasts might be, there's an Ancient of Days that has 10,000 times 10,000 people serving him, and he's the one that's in judgment. And then the Son of Man comes before the Ancient of Days and receives this kingdom. And so while we don't have these next verses on the screen, let's just keep reading and see what happens. As Daniel is so alarmed by this, he approached one of those stood there in verse 16 and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever and ever. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying, with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, and which devoured and broke into pieces and stamped what was left with its feet, and about the 10 horns that were on his head, and the other horn that came up, and before which 3 of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth and spoke great things, and that seemed greater than its companions. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them until the Ancient of Days came. And judgment was given for the saints of the Most High at a time when the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth and trample it down and break it to pieces. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall rise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the former ones, and shall put down three kings. He shall speak words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law, and they shall be given into his hand for a time, times and half a time. But notice what happens next. The court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. His kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. I know that's an extended reading, and that's more than we usually read at one time, but I want us to get a sense of everything that happened in Daniel's vision and everything that happened when he found out about his vision. And so it's interesting just to think about the interpretation he gets. He goes to someone standing there, and he says that the four great beasts are four kings. Now, if you'll notice, in this specific passage, he doesn't give specifics as to which kingdoms correspond with which of these beasts. I personally think if you line this up with Daniel chapter 2, you have the same kingdoms that are mentioned there. The Babylonians, the Medo-Persians, the Greeks, and the Romans. To me, that seems to make sense, and it really lines up with history. But if you'll notice, the interpretation doesn't rest on knowing exactly who these kings were. It rests on knowing who the great king is. And so we see this dream that Daniel gives. There are just a couple of things I'd like to point out tonight. It's the dream that Daniel receives of a whole different kingdom. Just as Nebuchadnezzar's dream did, this dream emphasized the power of God over any other kingdom. The Ancient of Days shows up to fulfill the role of a judge. And the Ancient of Days is the one who has thousands working for him. You see, many times in the ancient world, pagan gods were associated with specific countries or specific nations, but this is one that has power over every nation. This is a king that has power over every language, every tribe and tongue. And three different times in this chapter, Daniel is told, the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. There is one kingdom that will be more powerful than any others. During CBI a couple of weeks ago, we had a panel discussion, and there were several individuals who served as elders that served on this panel, and we're talking about challenges in congregations. And one of the men who serves as an elder and does ministry in another state, he made a statement that I thought was really challenging. He says that at some point, we have to make a decision, and if we're going to be Christians first, and specifically, he said, are we going to be Americans first or Christians first? And I thought that was a powerful statement. I'm extremely blessed, as we all are, to be part of this country. I'm thankful for that. But I have to ask myself, where's my identity? Where am I really placing my values and my kingdom? Because there's one kingdom that's going to be more powerful than any other kingdom on earth. Am I going to identify with that kingdom? It means I have to ask myself, where am I investing my time and energy? There are a lot of things it's good to invest my time in, but where's my focus? What makes me the most upset? What gets me the most riled up? Is it when people talk about God, or is it when people talk about something else that I'm invested in? Where's my investment? Because there's only one kingdom that's going to last. What makes me more upset? When someone says that they don't believe in God, or someone says they don't agree with me politically? Where do I line up when I'm trying to be faithful to my kingdom? You see, ultimately, we serve a kingdom that will be above all others. And it didn't matter how many rulers showed up and thought they were powerful, their rule died with them. You see, no temporary king can make a permanent command stick. Only an everlasting to everlasting king can make everlasting to everlasting laws. And so there's going to be one kingdom that lasts. There are some estimates that tell us there are hundreds of thousands of people in our world in the last two decades that have lost their lives simply because of claiming Christianity. Simply even saying that they believed in God. Not necessarily even agitating for that, but just saying they believed that Jesus was the Son of God. They've lost their lives. And so it's important for us to have this reminder, there's one kingdom that lasts. It's the dream of a different kingdom and the dream of a different king. It seems odd that there's a beast that has horns. I know that seems strange. But horns were seen to symbolize rulers. We see that in Revelation. You have this horn that comes up and is able to say things against God and able even to rile people up. And it seems like it's persecuting those who were seeking to believe in God. But there is a judgment. There's a judgment where the Ancient of Days is there. It doesn't matter how good a temporary king or ruler sounds or how powerful he thinks he is, he can't stand up against the one true judge. When we see things that we've seen in the last few days, when we see people lose their lives in terrible acts of harm and of evil that befall people who didn't do anything to initiate it, but all of a sudden are victims of a senseless act of violence, we can be reminded that there is a judge, that there is one who is over all, that there's evil on this earth, but that evil will be judged one day. It won't be on this side of eternity, but we can see that there's no temporary king that can pass a law or make a command. There's no thing one person can do that lives on earth that is more powerful than the judgment of the God who created it, the God who's over all countries and all nations. I know it doesn't heal the hurt that we feel. I know it doesn't take away the pain or even the effects of evil. But it is a reminder that the one who created us all is the one who calls us all into account. And so this evil we have around us won't last forever. And that's what those who followed God needed to hear in Babylonian exile. They needed to hear that just because the Babylonians were in charge, this wasn't where it ended. And just because the Medo-Persians would come in and all of a sudden Darius would be the king, that isn't where it's going to end. And you have the Greeks with Alexander the Great and then the Roman Empire in the time of Jesus that looked like they were the most powerful ones. But it didn't matter. There was one who had judgment over all. And then the Son of Man came before him, one who was like a son of man. This is a title Jesus uses to describe himself. He calls himself the Son of Man in Mark chapter 2 and verse 10. In fact, in Mark 14, when he's asked by the high priest if he was the Messiah, Jesus said that he was. And he said, "You'll see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power." They understood what Jesus was saying when he said he was the Son of Man. He's saying, "I'm the one that the Ancient of Days gave dominion to." It's the same idea that we have in the New Testament when Jesus is given the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow. It's the same idea it's seen here in Daniel chapter 7. That there was going to be a judge that would give the kingdom to the Son of Man. And so we have to ask ourselves which king we choose to follow. During the Civil War, Julia Ward Howe wrote a song that has since become incredibly famous, the Battle Hymn of the Republic. It's been used as a patriotic song, but originally she intended it to be a song proclaiming the victory of God's kingdom in the midst of conflict. When she wrote, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. He has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer, and be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on." I think it's significant that in the middle of war and conflict, when it would be so easy to be discouraged, she wrote words that reminded her of who was in charge. And it sounds like a march. And when you sing it, it seems like a march. But it's a reminder of God being the commander that is the one that you want to follow, that God is the one who rules over all. And so we have to ask ourselves which king we're choosing to follow, because this isn't just a dream. This isn't just a passing vision, a nightmare that Daniel woke up from and realized that it was just a terrible dream, and maybe he'd had something to eat the night before that didn't agree with him. It wasn't just that. This was serious. This dream would come true. These kingdoms would show up. These people would battle against the people of God, and not a lot has changed today. And so the question is, what am I going to do about it? What king will I choose to follow? We're blessed to get to live where we live. There are others living in other nations that are seeking to spread God's word, and they're facing a lot of obstacles. We need to be remembering them in prayer. We need to be prepared for any obstacles that might come our way. And as we try to deal with things that we see all around us, I don't know if it's just you, but it seems like social media makes it even harder for us to get through a day without seeing something happening somewhere that's just heartbreaking. We know the news that's happening all over the country and all over the world, and sometimes it just seems overwhelming, like it's too much for us to hold on to and too much for us to carry. And we watch the news or we see what's happening on Facebook or what's showing up on our Twitter feed, and we think, how can we even go on? How can we even make it another day? And so Daniel's vision in Daniel chapter 7 is important. It's important to remind us there is a judge. One thing I notice in Daniel chapter 7 is Daniel concludes the chapter, and he says, his thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed. Now, he's seen what's going to happen. He knows what the vision means. Why would his thoughts alarm him? I think that's kind of an interesting question. I wonder if it has something to do with the idea that there are going to be kingdoms that show up that are going to oppress the people of God before, eventually, there's judgment. This is just me. It doesn't say it in the text, but my understanding of this would be Daniel realizes there will be kingdom after kingdom that oppresses the people of God, and it alarms him that that's coming. It alarms him that's going to happen. He lived through it already. He would live through it again. And I think there's a lesson there for us to understand the realities of the world in which we live, and yet to know ultimately, I can choose to follow the King who is over all. I don't know if you've ever had a job where you had too many supervisors. The first job I ever had was at a miniature golf place that did go-karts and batting cages and everything else. And so I had a lot of bosses. I had one guy who'd come by. He was in charge of me, and he'd tell me to do this. And another guy would tell me to do something different. It's kind of hard to determine who to listen to. If we let ourselves, we could respond to all kinds of voices in the world today. I could have all kinds of people telling me what to do. You could have all kinds of people telling you what to do. I have to sift through all that and say, can I listen to the King of the kingdom that will never fade away, that's from everlasting to everlasting? Can I trust in Him? And the words of that King tonight are that you can come in to that kingdom. You can be part of the family of God, and you can live knowing that even though we deal with so many horrendous acts of evil in our world, that the God who created us and loved us enough to send His Son will redeem us. And when there is a judgment time, we'll be able to spend an eternity with Him, not because we've passed judgment on our own merit, but because He's given us a way that we can be identified with His Son, that we can be seen as sinless and blameless, even though we're anything but sinless and blameless. We can do that by becoming a child of God. If you need to make that decision, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to start that walk of faith, that can happen tonight. It may just be that what's going on in the world has gotten you discouraged, has gotten you down, and you just need encouragement and prayers. That's what we're here for as a congregation, brothers and sisters in Christ. If we can help you in any way, please come as we stand, as we sing together.